Heat rose off the road day after day that summer. Radios carried the same songs into car interiors and open kitchens. People said the word van more than they had ever done. Parents watched corners from porch chairs. Kids moved in groups, even on short routes. The city felt a tension that did not lift at night. In the squad room, maps went up that looked beyond one neighborhood. Colored pins marked recovery sites near water across the region. Lines showed canals that ran like seams between towns. The board did not claim connection. It showed proximity in time. It showed what people spoke about in grocery lines and barber chairs. It showed worry. Detectives read old case files and clipped fresh articles. They checked dates, locations, and victim ages. They marked weapons when known. They marked whether a car had been found with tires cut. They marked whether bodies had been moved. The picture stayed mixed. Some cases shared a road near water and little else. Some shared method and age range, but sat far from the route that touched Hollywood. The record would not let them collapse everything into one story. In houses near the girls' school, people used new habits. A father walked the block and stood by the bench at dismissal time. A mother called the next house to confirm that a friend had arrived. Teenagers rolled their eyes and then accepted rides. Youth groups met in the day instead of at night. The small changes added up to a new rhythm no one had planned. At roll call, a lieutenant spoke about rumor. He did not dismiss it. Rumor sometimes holds a grain that sends you to a door you would have missed. He said the grain must be cleaned and weighed. He asked the room to note the difference between pattern and mood. Pattern comes from dates and methods and maps. Mood comes from fear. The room understood. Many had children the same age as the girls. The question of links rose in every meeting with the public. Was this tied to other killings near water in the mid-70s? Was a single hand behind more than one scene? Detectives answered with steady lines. They named what they knew. They named what they did not know. They did not promise unity where the file showed variance. One senior detective laid out four columns on a whiteboard. Location. Victim profile. Method. Vehicle or transport clues. He filled each column with chalk for cases people grouped together in talk. He circled differences. He drew boxes where two cases shared a trait and left them open where they did not. He stepped back and let the room see the mix. The board helped. It gave the community a way to think about the question without sliding into a story that outran proof. Families asked their own version of the question in private. They wanted to know if a larger sweep of work would bring a faster answer. Detectives explained that a broad dragnet often pulls in more noise than fact. They promised to run comparisons in a formal way. They promised to meet the wider fear with clear work. They did not tie their case to a series unless the record forced it. Patrol units adjusted routes to watch the long roads that led west toward water. Stops increased in pull-offs that allowed quick entry and exit. Officers noted fresh tire tracks and new broken glass. They wrote who used those pull-offs for lawful tasks. They learned which lots became informal rest points and which remained empty even at noon. The road itself was not a suspect. The road still deserved study. The press asked about series language. Reporters favored headlines that ran hot. The office kept to plain words. It said homicide. It said recovery site. It said witness sought. It did not repeat nicknames for eras or killers during the early months. It avoided any line that would turn a case into lore. The point was to keep the focus on proof. Inside the lab, staff pulled archive traces from more than one case and marked what each file held. Some had only photographs and a few fibers from clothing. Some had cast tire impressions that had been taken in sand and lost detail. Some had bullets or fragments with enough lands and grooves to warrant a future check. Many had nothing that modern tools could stretch. The lab wrote a priority list that balanced age, condition, and potential. The girl's case sat near the top because clothing had been preserved well. At community meetings, people spoke the same fear in different ways. A grandmother asked if her grandkids were safe on the bus. A shop owner asked if a curfew would help. A teen asked how to tell a safe ride from a trap. A deputy answered with simple advice. Know your route. Walk in pairs. Ask for a name before you go near a car. Never lean in. Step back if any driver asks you to. Call out to a store or a house, and make the person come to the door if you need help. The room nodded. The advice felt small next to fear. It still gave shape to action. Detectives reached out to agencies up the coast and across county lines. They traded case summaries and learned where other departments stood on links. Some saw clusters. Some saw noise. Some had a single case that hurt the same way and stayed alone on a shelf. The trade sparked side checks and new calls. Most led nowhere. A few gave techniques worth stealing, like how one property room had reboxed fragile cloth to let air move without dust. A rumor ran that a specific road crew could not be trusted. Officers talked to the crew one by one and found men who had worked long hours under sun and gone home tired and loud, not predatory. The rumor died after 3 days. It left a mark on those men. The sergeant who ran the talks walked back to their site and thanked them for the time. He told them why the checks mattered and told them he knew they had been asked to carry fear for other people. They shook hands and went back to work. The fear that spread did not move the case forward by itself. It did change the canvas. Witnesses who had stayed quiet came forward. Some brought clean lines. Some brought visions made of dread. The call takers learned to listen for hard edges. They wrote down concrete words. They set aside epithets and moods. They asked for time, place, and distance. They asked for a plate fragment or a bumper sticker shape. They asked for a reason the caller believed a memory tied to the day. Good calls survived those questions and moved to a detective's desk. Within the office, a small unit built a table of cases from that decade that shared rough traits. Age range, daytime abduction, bodies left near water. The table did not name a single person across them. It allowed checks of tire sizes and footwear types and ribbon widths on photographs. It allowed someone to say this tire rut measures a span that fits a pickup more than a van and to show the numbers. It kept talk anchored to measurement. The city had lived through storms and high water. It knew that some seasons build a run of loss that has more to do with chance and pressure than with a person's plan. People still asked if one mind sat behind every fear they held. Detectives respected the question and kept their own line. The file in front of them held two victims, a route from a neighborhood bench to a canal bank, and a set of traces on cloth. Any larger story would have to wait. A pastor hosted a night where youth sat with officers and asked blunt questions. The teens wanted to know if anyone was watching their backs with full attention. The officers said yes and described patrol shifts by time and road. They asked the teens to show them routes they used and to point out spots that felt wrong. The teens taught them which corners went dead quiet at midday and which lit up with eyes at dusk. The hour built trust and pushed the wider fear into shared work. In the months that followed, summer drifted into school and then into holidays. The case did not rest, though some days gave only small steps. The team maintained a schedule for checks on vans that had not closed. They refreshed contact with witnesses who had given solid lines. They ran a second look at cases from other towns that had turned a new page. They logged each step. The log mattered as much as any guess. Years were on memory. Logs do not. By the end of that season, an internal memo laid out the agency position on links. The memo said the double homicide near the canal sat inside a climate of fear that summer. It also said the case showed differences that set it apart from other events people talked about under one banner. Victim ages matched some files and not others. Travel path and recovery site shape matched a few and not many. Method aligned with more than one pattern widely seen in that period. The memo ended by stating a plan. Study comparisons every year. Do not let a theory drive a test. Treat each case by its own record. Families heard that position in person. Detectives sat at kitchen tables and explained the stance with care. They said a link was not ruled out by pride or stubbornness. It was not adopted to calm fears. The decision to hold the case on its own came from what the scene, the timeline, and the preserved items said. The families did not need to agree to understand. They did not need to commit to a view while grief kept time. Across the county, parents kept habits born of that summer. Rides were arranged more often. Neighbors texted or called when a child moved from one house to another. Schools built sign-out boards for after-hours clubs. Kids heard the same rules from many mouths. Stay with a friend. Trust your gut. Make noise if anything feels wrong. The rules felt old by winter, which meant they had worked their way into daily life. The file on the girls did not swell with arrests or named suspects in those years. It grew with maintenance. Every few months, a detective read it front to back and wrote a summary that showed what had been tried and what remained open. Those summaries saved the case when staff changed. They kept headway from slipping. They set the stage for the day new science would reach back through paper and cloth. When talk about a wider series rose again in later decades, The Office returned to the same measured lines. It named known traits and times. It restated differences. It updated the plan to compare at set intervals. It promised to speak in public when proof arrived. It refused to fill silence with a story that felt neat. That restraint was part of the culture that later allowed a cold case unit to work without noise. The wider fear never fully left the region. Roads by water still carried weight in memory. Parents taught their kids to respect pull-offs and stay in the open. The city grew, yet the old lines remained on maps and in minds. Each new case drew a fast check against the table of traits. Most fell away as unrelated. A few got one more look and then slid off the board. In the end, the chapter about fear belongs in the file because it shaped the work. It brought eyes to corners and calls to lines that might have stayed quiet. It also tried to pull the case into its orbit. Detectives had to guard against that pull. They did it by writing dates, measuring distances, and sealing bags. They did it by calling families, even when nothing new had arrived. They did it by treating talk as a signal to check, not a proof to accept. The case of two girls from Hollywood moved on its own rails through that climate. It carried a short walk in daylight, a bench, a van mentioned by more than one person, and a canal bank that gave back what it had been asked to hold. It carried items that had been bagged and signed by people who believed their work might matter for decades. It did not need a grand story to make sense. It needed patience, custody, and time. This chapter ends with a clear point. The community lived with fear that year. The office listened and worked within it. The file remained tied to what had been saved on cloth and recorded in ink. The next chapters return to that line and follow evidence from a property shelf to a modern bench where traces speak in a new voice. Wind pressed reeds toward still water. Sun lit the bank from a high angle. A slow scan of ground, cloth, and sand told a plain story without a voice. Two set-down spots sat close together on the slope. Sand held shallow ovals where weight had rested. No drag path ran between shoulder and water. Grass bent near the line of travel, then stood back up. The route from the road to the bank stayed narrow. Foot signs tracked in pairs, then stopped at the ovals. A return set of prints showed fewer marks, as if two people left lighter than they arrived. The place looked used for a stop, not a struggle. Clothing showed soil on points that meet a seat or a floor more than open ground. Dust along hems matched road grit, not canal mud. Small vegetable seeds clung to fabric on one side only, the side that faced reeds during the short lay on the bank. Tiers in cloth ran straight with clean edges, a tool or a hard edge in a vehicle more than rock. No long fiber pulls across knees or elbows. No smear lines down the slope. A faint heel at reed line sat inside the set-down arc, not along the approach. The mark faced the water. A second faint heel faced the road. Those two prints framed where someone crouched to lower a body. The reeds near those prints held a dull polish from cloth brushing past in one slow move. Farther up the bank, reed tips showed no snap or crush that fits a chase on foot. Both forms had layered clothing. Folds pressed flat in short bands, a sign of weight from a hand or a strap across a lap during transport. A light dust bloom across one shoulder looked like transfer from a seat back. A narrow thread caught in a pocket seam did not match the girl's garments. It went into a fold for later work. A hair with a tone lighter than either girl's lay on fabric near a cuff. It went into a fold as well. No cartridge cases lay on open sand. No fresh lead marks scarred nearby wood. The bank gave no radial soil spatter or crater that comes from a close strike. Water near shore showed no fresh cloud from impact. A search out to knee depth turned up nothing linked to shots fired. The slope, the set-down ovals, and the clean approach told a single thing in concert. Violence had not played out here. This spot served as delivery and exit. Ballistics started with what the medical examiner recovered. The lab logged each item with a number, then measured lands and grooves under glass. If a weapon ever surfaced, those numbers would rule in or out. In 1975, lab kits read blood group and secretor status. They checked for semen with standard screens used then. Fiber work relied on microscopes and color tests. No DNA bench stood ready. The future would have to come to this cloth. The day's work on the bank flowed into a ledger at property. Paper sacks went to open wire racks with tags facing out. Seals showed ink from the canal bank and fresh ink from each intake. A clerk wrote who held each bag, even for 5 minutes. A lock turned on a steel door with a sound no one forgot. That sound marked a link in a line that stayed unbroken. Tire signs on the shoulder came out thin. The road took too much traffic for clean pattern. Even so, a span between two shallow ruts at a nearby pull-off fit a range used by full-size vans of the period. A chalk arrow on the map marked that number for later. No one wrote a brand. Numbers help. Labels mislead when ground gives little. The fishing family's second pass added a small cue. A radio near the road played one summer song at the moment they parked. That tune hit local air in heavy rotation during late morning. The detail did not fix a clock to the minute, yet it strengthened the frame built by patrol and dispatch logs. A driver who used this shoulder likely knew how noise from the road covered quick work. Soil under both set-down ovals showed a thin crust where the top layer dried after weight came off. The crust cracked in a ring that matched a short pause, not a long stay. A drop of water fell from reed tips and broke one tiny crack line while Tex worked. The ring did not reform. This told the team the pause ended not long before discovery. Heat and wind in June do the rest. A map now held fixed points. Mile marker. Shoulder edge. Reed patch with a curl like a hook. Set down ovals. Heel marks facing opposite directions. Path in and out. A wide shot pinned scale. A close shot added texture. The place carried a strange mix of noise and privacy. Trucks roared past. 10 paces off the asphalt, Reed swallowed a person from sight. Serology screened stains with simple tests. A phenolphthalein swab turned pink on contact with a small area on cloth, a sign of blood. A precipitin test later confirmed human origin. Secretor work gave profile lines used in that era. Fiber checks found 2 unknown strands with a synthetic sheen and a twist not seen on the girl's garments. The lab logged those as unknowns worth a future look. A trooper who ran this road at dawn on many shifts spoke to a detective. He pointed out pull-offs that drew regulars. He marked 2 where weekend anglers parked. He marked 1 where swamp tours put in airboats. He also marked 3 where few stopped unless a truck ran hot or a plan needed seclusion. The recovery point sat near one of those 3. A flight line photo from a light helicopter gave a view broader than any map on a hood. The pull-off with fresh ruts lay north. The recovery point sat south. Both sat near screens of reeds taller than a person. A van could nose in, block half the view from northbound drivers, and leave without a long merge. That layout mattered. The driver had chosen a spot that shaved seconds off risk. On one shirt, a faint print of a ribbed surface ran across a small zone near shoulder height. The texture looked like vinyl. Door trim on many work vans used ribs to hide scuffs. The lab took macro photos and traced a single rib pitch in millimeters. If a match ever appeared in a garage or yard, a tech could lay the photo over a door panel and test the pitch. The footwear cast taken near Reed's lacked detail, yet the width sat in a range common for a man in work boots. The lab wrote width and heel length and set a caution flag next to both numbers. Sand lies. Casts in sand lie more. The note said use with care. Air shifted and brought a hint of fuel from the road. The supervisor read the list out loud. Wide shots done. Close shots done. Bodies removed in order. Ground below recorded after removal. Clothing rolled on clean paper. Trace lifted where visible. Map fixed to reference points. Pull off north checked. Rut span measured. Helicopter shots labeled with arrows. Witness statements logged with time words, not mood words. A woman who walked at dawn told a deputy about a van she had noticed more than once near a feeder road, always with the driver's arm out the window. She had no plate, yet she remembered a nick on the grill. She drew a small map onto a note card with a pen from her pocket. The line traced a route from the city to the edge in a way only locals drew it. The card went into the file. No purse turned up on the bank. No school book. No jewelry in open view. A tiny metal bead sat near one set-down oval. It looked like a broken crimp from a pendant loop. The tech lifted it with the tip of a moist swab and dried it under a lamp before folding it into paper. It weighed almost nothing, yet it would sit in a box for decades without loss. Limits pressed in on every bench. Fibers match on pattern or color under glass, not on source with force. Blood group rules people in or out in large groups, not one-to-one. Ballistics wait for a weapon to meet a profile. Staff wrote those limits next to findings so no one read too much into early work. Each sheet held a short line on method, a short line on result, and a short line on strength. By late day, shadows dropped long again across the same slope. The rectangle of tape came down. The road drowned small sounds. The bank looked plain. A stranger would have missed all of it. The record did not miss. Film hung to dry. Notes stacked in a manila folder. One box held cloth, fibers, a hair, a tiny metal bead, and a cast from sand. The box weighed less than a jug of water, and more than anyone in those rooms wanted to admit. The families received a visit with measured words. Detectives told them the scene spoke of transport to the bank, not violence on site. They said no one had found a purse. They said the lab held fabric and trace for more work. They did not speak in grand arcs. They gave simple lines and promised a call for any turn, large or small. A drive at dusk from the Hollywood bench to the canal bank took less than an hour with lights and traffic in summer flow. The route offered many exits and many places to pause without eyes on a vehicle. The pull-off near the recovery point sat high on the list for a test drive in a later chapter. For now, the map stayed on a desk with pins and string. A faint film across one shoe sole read like fine dust from a shop floor, not a yard. The grit had tiny fragments of plaster and pigment. Trades leave tracks in small ways. The lab kept the shoe bag closed until the pathologist finished work, then tapped one edge over a clean tray. A few grains fell. Enough for a look under glass. Enough to mark a possible trade when interviews began to widen. The property ledger gained two more lines when items moved to the medical examiner's suite for photography, then back to the vault. Each move carried initials, time, and a short purpose. No line read vague words. Every line used a verb a clerk could defend in front of a judge many years later. Move. Receive. Seal. Store. Release. Return. All the small pieces pointed in one direction. A vehicle brought two girls to the edge. Two people lifted and set them down. The stop took minutes, not hours. The driver knew where a short stop hid under road noise. The team wrote no names next to those lines. Names would come from witnesses, from logs, from lab benches, and from later work that reads cloth in a new way. By nightfall, the water went flat again, and trucks rolled past without a glance. Inside the file, the bank spoke in full, quiet sentences, waiting for the day new tools would answer them. The box sat on a steel shelf in a room that smelled like paper and dust. A tag faced out. Ink had browned with time. The seal line ran across the fold like a thin scar. The case number stayed legible. Property logged the first intake on a ledger page with clean lines. Each line named an item, a date, a hand. A clerk read the numbers back to the detective, then tucked the box into a row for homicides. The rule was simple. Homicide evidence did not purge. Not after 5 years. Not after 20. Never without a court order. The room held rows of shelves that stopped short of the ceiling. Cards faced outward on every shelf. Each card carried a range of case numbers. Fans moved air through the rows. A thermometer hung near the door. A moisture gauge sat beside it. Staff checked both with morning coffee still hot in the cup. Transfers stayed narrow. One person lifted the box. One person received it. Two initials landed on the same line with a time between them. When the box left for the medical examiner, the line named an escort and a return slot. When it came back, a clerk ran a finger along the seal to feel for breaks before signing it in. Paper bags breathed on wire racks. No stack sat heavy over fabric. No plastic-wrapped cloth. Labels faced out so staff could read without opening anything. Small envelopes sat in trays so they did not slide and split. Each change in storage got a note. New room in the same building. New row in the new room. Same seals intact. A property clerk who started in the early 80s told a new hire that every signature in the ledger was a promise. The paper knew if you kept it. The paper knew if you forgot. She spoke without drama. The new hire nodded and wrote his own name the same way each time. Summer storms came and went. The building shook during one hard season. A leak marked a ceiling tile two rooms over. Staff moved boxes away from that line and logged the move. The box from the canal went from shelf G to shelf J in a smooth count. A supervisor signed the note that explained why. Audits ran each quarter. A supervisor chose a list at random. Clerks rolled ladders, pulled boxes, checked seals, and read case numbers aloud. The box from the canal passed every pull. Seals held. Labels held. The clerk wrote pass in green ink and closed the file drawer. Years brought small improvements. New racks stood on rubber feet to lift boxes off the floor. Desiccant packets sat in bins where humidity rose. A clock on the wall ran 5 minutes fast, so staff did not crowd close to closing time. Power tests ran once a month for the generator. A light flickered. The room hummed. The fans kept turning. A detective who had worked the case near the start visited the vault when he knew he would retire. He stood in the aisle and looked at the row. He touched the edge of the box like a person touches a porch rail before leaving home. He thanked the clerk and walked out quiet. The agency changed buildings when the county outgrew the old rooms. Property moved in stages with guards at both doors and logs that spanned the street. Each box left through one door, rode in one truck, and entered through one door. The case book for the move took two clerks to lift. The box from the canal kept the same seal. The ledger gained 6 new lines and 3 initials for the day. The new vault was brighter. Barcode labels appeared. Old paper tags stayed on. The barcode did not replace the seal or the signatures. It added a quick scan that pulled up the chain for each item. Clerks wore gloves for everything, not only for cloth. The room ran cooler. A new gauge showed moisture in a digital readout the size of a matchbox. Training slides told the same story each year. Use paper for cloth. Limit handling. Log every move. Store heavy under light. Keep aisles clear. Never stack on a seal. Instructors pointed to the box and said the quiet line. This is evidence that we'll need a future we cannot see. The science changed. The lab added benches and fume hoods. Staff learned new ways to read small traces. The property clerk and the lab tech met in the doorway between rooms and spoke about how to lift without contact. They practiced dry runs with dummy bags. They wrote a joint note that said prepare for later DNA. Do not cut before a plan exists. A young analyst came on in the 90s and asked why a case this old still drew space on an active shelf. The senior tech pointed at the seam on a paper bag where ink touched ink. She said that line might save a match in a decade. The analyst smiled and wrote the rule on a sticky note for her desk. When case reviews cycled through cold files, a detective signed out the box to read the inventory. He did not open sacks inside. He checked the list against the ledger. He matched item numbers to the photo log. He wrote the word intact in two places and initialed both. He signed the box back in and watched the clerk lock the door. Hurricane seasons tested the plan more than once. Staff wrapped shelves in plastic only when walls leaked in rooms far away. They did not wrap evidence bags. They raised the lowest racks one rung higher. They stacked sandbags in hallways and checked the generator fuel level with a long stick like checking oil. The box did not move during those storms. Paper stayed dry. A later sergeant pushed for a full property audit when he took the unit. The inventory matched the last audit within 3 minor errors that came from labels faded on unrelated boxes. The clerk corrected those tags and logged the fix with a note that blamed sun on a cart by a window. Nothing in the homicide row changed. The box sat where the scan said it sat. Requests for rework began to include the word touch. The lab sent a memo to property. Items that held fabric with flat surfaces might yield trace. Do not press. Do not load weight on top. Hold items in breathable paper. The memo became a sign on a wall. The sign lived on a clip near the homicide row. When the first cold case unit formed, a detective from that team came down to property on his first day. He told the clerk he hoped to pull a list of cases with preserved cloth. The clerk pointed at the aisle and named 4. She named the box from the canal first. He took his hat off for a second and ran a hand through his hair. He said he had read about it as a recruit. A new software system came online and asked for a full re-entry of old numbers. Clerks opened the book, page by page, and typed case numbers, item numbers, dates, names, and locations. A second clerk checked every third entry against the paper. The box from the canal gained a barcode label on the outside of the outer wrap. The old tag stayed where it had always been. Time etched the room in small ways. Metal dulled. Tape on the floor showed paths where feet had run the same lines for years. A step stool kept a dent where a heavy boot had landed. A wall clock went 2 minutes slow and then got replaced without fanfare. The aisle where the box lived stayed clean and quiet. Staff resleeved photo negatives into archival pages when they found edges starting to curl. They scanned images into a system that kept dates and frame numbers in the file name. They filed the paper copies in flat boxes that lay in labeled drawers. The canal shots kept their place. The scanned images sat under the same numbers. The detective on cold case did not have to ask a clerk to find them. He typed and they appeared. policy evolved with method. The lab adopted a rule to consult with the prosecutor before consuming any fabric in old cases. Cold case detectives brought the box to a meeting room, still sealed. The group made a plan. If a screen suggested viable DNA on a garment, the lab would cut in measured steps with photos and notes at each cut. If a spot read weak, they would stop. They would not gamble when a second pass in 5 years might read better. A long-tenured property supervisor retired and left a short letter in a drawer for the next person. The letter said respect the ink more than the stories. Stories change. Ink does not. The new supervisor pinned the letter inside a cabinet door. The first time a cold case detective signed the box out for modern testing, the chain line filled both halves of a page. The clerk read each seal. She compared initials from 1975 to the shapes on the seam. She smiled when she saw the old hand still clear. She added her own initials and time, then watched the detective walk the box to a secure car. No siren. No rush. Calm travel protected everything. The box crossed a hallway into a lab suite that did not exist when the girls were found. Lights ran cool. Benches shone. A tech cleared space and set clean paper down. A camera on a mount looked straight at the work surface. The detective stood back and watched the tech document the exterior once more. Numbers lined up from past to present. The tech took a breath and reached for a blade. Gloves snapped. A fresh blade sliced tape without touching paper fibers. The seal broke with a quiet sound. Inside, the original paper sacks sat in order. Each sack bore familiar ink. The tech photographed each bag face and logged each item by item number and case number. New barcodes printed on small white stickers, and the tech placed them on outer sleeves, not on the original paper. The original seal line stayed untouched. Property updated the ledger with a note that named the lab tech and the detective. The note included start time for lab work and a target return. The clerk drew a light box around the note. The box made the line easy to find in a hurry. The habit saved minutes when calls came from the lab calling for more light or another camera battery. A younger detective stepped into the lab to watch. She had grown up in the county and knew the case as a story told by older neighbors. The tech pointed at a tiny envelope within the box and said it held a hair lifted in the first hours at the canal. The detective nodded once and said the word careful. The tech said always. Even after the first modern pass, the vault remained the home of record. The box returned between steps. The clerk checked seals added by the lab and signed the box in with the same slow hand she used for 100 other cases. Storage location stayed constant. Staff did not let a high-profile case bump others to worse conditions. Equality in property keeps truth in court. The first round of modern screens told the team what they had hoped to hear. Certain fabric surfaces had protected trace. The lab began the methodical process that would lead to names no one had been able to say out loud for decades. The box had done its work by being still. Back in the vault, the aisle stood quiet again. The thermometer and the gauge read steady. The fans kept air moving across rows. A clerk wrote a note to order more archival sleeves before the next budget cycle. She slid the note under a small magnet. The note sat above the row that held the box. Later, when staff presented the cold case process to a room of recruits, they set the box on a table and walked through 50 years in 10 minutes. They showed seals old and new. They showed ledger lines from pens that had long run dry. They read out the simple verbs that had held the case together. Receive, record, store, audit, release, return. One recruit raised a hand and asked what part mattered most. The clerk said the part you do today. The detective said the same. The recruit looked at the box and nodded. The file now had a bridge from 1975 to a lab bench with tools that could read what paper had protected. The next chapter followed that bridge into the science. The seals had held. The ink had held. The box was ready to speak. A quiet lab room waited with white walls and steady air. Benches held covered trays. A camera hung over the work surface. The box arrived. The seal lines were photographed, then read out loud against the ledger. A tech and a detective checked each signature. They signed a new line with time and purpose. The box moved from the pass window to the bench. A second tech watched and kept notes. Two people, two sets of eyes, one record. Gloves on. Mask secure. Sleeves taped at the wrist so no skin showed. A fresh blade lifted the old tape from the outer wrap without cutting fibers. The lid opened with a soft sound. Inside lay the original paper sacks with ink from another era. The camera took a photo of each bag face. Numbers matched the inventory from the vault. The team planned the order before a single fold changed. Start with exterior lint and debris that escaped decades ago when sacks shifted. Move to fabric surfaces with the best chance to hold trace. Leave deep cuts for last if they proved needed at all. The plan read like a map. A lab lives by maps. A blank control sat on the bench to measure background. A positive control sat next to it to prove the run worked. The room had been cleaned and swabbed at start of shift. Air filters had been checked and logged. The door showed a red light while work ran, so no one entered without a call. The first bag opened. The tech rolled the garment outward onto clean paper. Photos marked position and folds. A low light raked across the cloth to show texture and grit. A fine brush teased loose a small field of dust into a paper cradle. The cradle folded with two turns and a crease. A number landed on the flap. The number matched the photo. A swab moistened with sterile water traced small circles across a cuff where hands had rested in transport. Another swab ran the inside of a pocket that had been turned inward then back again at the canal. Swabs went into tubes that snapped shut with an audible click. Numbers landed on each tube. A tray held them upright like a small fence. The lab lead paused the work and read the list. Exterior debris collected. Cuff swabs collected. Pocket swabs collected. Control swabs still sealed. Camera time confirmed. Notes up to time. The team nodded and moved to the next garment. On a shirt shoulder, a faint band of grime matched a spot where fabric meets a seat back. A damp swab traced that band. The tech did not scrub. He floated the surface and let the water lift trace into the cotton tip. Another swab traced a ribbed print line that had shown under macro earlier. The rib pitch in the photo gave hope that door trim had touched this zone. A different table held a hooded fume cabinet. Here a second tech prepared the first extractions. Tubes opened and closed in a set rhythm. Swab heads went to lysis so cells could release DNA. The tech pipette with slow hands that never shook. A notebook held the same rhythm in ink. Time. Lot number. Tube ID. Step. When a tube changed hands, a form changed hands with it. Each transfer wrote a new line. Each line named a person and a clock time. The detective watched the page grow. He knew this bland sheet would be gold later if any voice asked who touched what and when. The first run used a kit that could read short tandem repeats across standard markers. The same kit sat in many rooms across the country. The lab did not chase novelty. It used stable tools that made stable profiles. If trace sat on this cloth, the kit would see it. Trace lives thin on fabric. The tech cut nothing large. She pressed swabs to surfaces with the light touch of a careful hand. She changed gloves after each item. She cleaned the bench between items and checked a UV lamp for any smear she had missed. The blank control sat open and then closed on time to catch any stray DNA from the room. Blank means the room did not speak into the result. If the blank speaks, the day starts over. The extraction room gave way to the instrument room. The machine accepted tubes and printed a list of seats. The tech scanned each barcode and watched the screen for matches to the plan. The detective stood at the glass and looked at his own reflection. He had waited years to see this step on this case. Controls read first. The positive control produced the expected profile. The blank control read quiet. The line through the middle of the screen looked like a calm road at night. The tech nodded once. She relaxed her grip on the mouse and loaded the first case samples. Numbers rose on the display as alleles read across markers. Most swabs gave nothing useful. Decades burned signal down. One cuff swab showed a mixed profile with a major and a minor contributor. The minor read close to noise. The major showed strength across several markers. The tech kept her face still and her voice level. She called the lab lead over and pointed with a capped pen. The lab lead said to rerun that sample for confirmation and to prepare the next passes on the same garment. Each run generated a file that landed in a secure folder with an automatic timestamp. The system wrote who logged in and who looked. Access itself became part of the record. The detective did not touch the keyboard. He signed a view log instead. Differential extraction came next on a set of zones where early screens had hinted at semen. The method separated cell types, so the lab would not lose a trace of a minor profile in a crowd. The work took hours. The team moved slow. Steps had to land in order, or a thin voice would be lost. While one team ran chemistry, another stepped into a clean room that handled nothing wet. They laid garments on a new paper field and rolled sections through a gentle wet vacuum, head designed to pull cells from deep weave without shredding threads. The fluid passed through a sterile bottle and a fine filter. The filter dried under air in a steel cage. The tech cut the filter in measured pieces and stored each as if it were glass. The method let the lab read places a swab could not reach. The lab lead called a short halt and checked the ledger against the live bench. Every item present, every tube labeled and seated, every photo on the disc, every step noted in a hand that could be read by a stranger. She signed a line that said she had checked. She returned gloves to work. Profiles began to multiply on the screen. Most came from the girls. A few read as mixtures where more than one person had touched. On two zones, the instrument drew a set of peaks that did not match either victim. The team kept voices calm. They did not say words like hit. They said the numbers they saw and saved the run. The room had rules against codifying a profile too early. A single run does not make a match. Two runs on the same sample with the same result build trust. A run on a second sample from the same item builds more. A run from a second method, such as the wet vacuum filter, raises trust again. The lab aimed for a stack of support before any call left the room. The analyst who had asked years ago why an old case still occupied a shelf stood at the viewing glass and understood the answer in her bones. The box had waited for this hour. The paper bags had kept air moving and moisture low. The seals had kept hands off. All that patience gave the lab a voice to read. Once profiles stabilized, the lab compared them to staff elimination samples. No lab person matched. The room stayed clean. The team compared to the victims and set them aside as expected. The remaining profiles moved into cautious bins. Unknown male. Unknown mix. Weak partial. The bins guided the next steps. The detective asked the question every family asks. When will you know a name? The lab lead gave the only honest line. When the profile strength and quality meet the bar we set at the start. The bar never drops for speed. The detective nodded. He had given that same line to families in other cases. It is the one that keeps faith. The lab worked through the night and into the morning. Repeats matched. The same unknown male profile rose again from a second cuff zone and from the wet vacuum filter. The team agreed the stack had reached the level required for a search. The tech printed a summary with marker calls, peak heights, and quality checks. The lab lead signed it and walked it to the detective. The detective secured the printed results in a case binder and uploaded the file through the approved path. He wrote who had access and locked the binder. The lab archived benches and instruments and signed the chain back to property for all items not still under active cut. Outside, the day looked ordinary. Kids went to school. Trucks moved on the highway. In the lab, the thin voice on cloth had grown strong enough to be heard across rooms and across years. The box on the shelf was no longer only a promise for some future team. It had become a partner. Next steps included a careful comparison of the unknown profile against known samples taken over the years from persons of interest who had consented or who had been ordered by a court to provide. It also included the path toward larger databases where rules set strict gates. Each gate would require checks and sign-offs. The lab lead set those gates in motion and scheduled confirmations with a second analyst. The unit wrote a memo that fixed every method used in plain words. Swabs on cuffs and pockets. Low-angle light to spot pressure bands. Macro imaging for rib pitch. Differential extraction where screens supported it. Wet vacuum collection on deep weave zones. Duplicate runs by independent hands. Controls clear. No staff hits. The memo went to the prosecutor with a request for a consult on next moves. The families received a call that said progress had been made in the lab. The detective did not say more on the phone. He set a time for a meeting and promised to bring someone who could explain the science in simple terms. He also promised that any new step would protect the case from harm later. On a new day, the lab pulled the garments again to test a final few zones the first plan had set aside. Nothing new rose there. The team took that as a win. It meant the stack already built stood as the heart of the evidence. The lab sealed each bag with fresh tape and signed over the seam. A camera shot the new seal and the date. The box returned to property for a pause while legal and investigative paths aligned. The clerk read the new signatures and added a line to the ledger. The box slid back onto the shelf under the same range card that had watched it for years. The fans hummed. The gauge on the wall read steady. Science had moved in steps across decades. Early tools had named blood and fibers. Mid-era tools had sorted mixtures and drawn profiles from cells too thin to see. Newer collection methods had learned to read deep weave without ripping cloth. None of this mattered without the simple care taken on a hot morning in 1975 when a tech chose paper over plastic and a clerk wrote a neat signature across a seal. The work now left the clean rooms and walked back into interview halls and record searches, carrying a profile strong enough to ask the world for a name. The profile from cloth moved from screen to file with a strength that met the bar. The lab lead wrote it in simple words and numbers and walked it across the hall. A detective opened a binder and slid the print under the first clip. A second analyst repeated the run on a fresh extract. Markers aligned. Peak heights held. Controls stayed clean. The lab issued a confirmed report that named a single unknown male profile as suitable for search. Staff logged the file in two systems and sealed the bench for the day. The printout entered the case binder. A copy entered an evidence packet with the same case number and a fresh seal signed across the seam. Property logged the packet and placed it in a locked drawer reserved for active work that needed fast access. Inside a small conference room, the cold case unit gathered with a prosecutor and the lab lead. The detective drew a square on a whiteboard and wrote the word profile. From that square, he drew arrows toward three paths. Known reference samples on file. Family references by consent. Wider database gates under policy. Each path carried rules that guarded both science and rights. Known references from past interviews were checked first. None matched. The lab then expanded to family reference sampling. Detectives knocked on doors and spoke in living rooms across more than one state. They explained why a cheek swab mattered. They answered questions about privacy, destruction of samples after use, and how the lab would report results. Some families agreed at once. Some asked for a day and then called back. Each consent form went into the file. Each swab moved in a cooler under a single officer's care. Every swab left a living room in a sealed tube with a number. Every tube entered the lab with a log entry and a signature. The lab separated consent swabs from case items on different benches and different days. No cross-flow. No shared trays. A wall calendar marked which bench ran which work. One family line brought a near hit, not a full identity. The lab called it a strong kinship signal that placed the unknown profile inside a branch of a tree. Analysts built that tree in pencil and moved names from loose notes to cleaner boxes as records arrived. Birth, death, marriages, and moves. A map took shape with lines that ran through South Florida in the mid-70s. Detectives returned to early witness notes that mentioned a white van more than once. They checked work routes, trade shops, and addresses tied to names on the growing tree. A few lines aligned with places near the girl's last known path. None locked tight until a set of public records placed one man in the region at the right time with a life that touched the mapped streets. The tree narrowed to a single name. Reference swabs from relatives in that branch tested against the crime scene profile. The lab issued a kinship report that stated the probability that the unknown male shared the same family line. The number crossed the threshold set at the first meeting. The path forward required a direct comparison to that name. The man had died years earlier. Records named him as Robert Clark Keebler. A search for lawful, retained DNA from medical or legal sources began. If no retained sample existed, the plan called for consensual family testing at a level that answered the question without touching a grave. The lab and the prosecutor set this order in writing and dated it. A lawful retained sample existed. It moved from storage under sealed chain with a courier and a witness. The lab received it in a separate room. Staff opened the kit under video and read the identifiers aloud. The case profile remained in a different file on a different bench until the retained sample was ready. The instrument drew a profile from the retained sample. Analysts compared it to the unknown male from the cloth. Marker by marker, the lines matched. A second analyst repeated the comparison and signed a separate sheet. A third reviewed both and signed the bottom line with the date and time. The lab lead wrote a summary in clear language and attached the statistics. The team met in the same small conference room. The lab lead placed the report on the table and spoke the key line. The unknown male profile from the girl's clothing matched the profile for Robert Clark Keebler. The room went quiet. A prosecutor asked two questions. Was the comparison independent? Were controls clean in every run? The lab lead answered yes to both, and pointed to the pages that showed it. The detective in charge called the families. He did not speak the name on the phone. He set a time for a meeting with a victim advocate present, and with the lab lead ready to explain. In the room, he laid out the steps in order. The families heard the name and the year of death. Questions came in waves. Where had the man lived in 1975? Was he known to police then? Did anyone ever stop his van on the right streets? Some answers existed in records. Some did not. The detective promised to chase each one and report back, even when the result felt thin. The legal term for a case that identifies an offender who cannot stand trial because of death is clear. Papers later called the file exceptionally cleared. Inside the room that day, the focus sat on proof, not labels. The families asked about standards. The lab lead spoke about match strength, independent review, and why the team had waited until the stack of support stood tall. Detectives reopened boxes of old tips and compared them against the name. A handful of past rumors mentioned men with first names that matched. None gave a last name. A small note in an old notebook placed a similar name near a job site in another county during the same summer. The team wrote it into the timeline with a caution flag and went to look for supporting records. The aim was to fill the map, not to stretch it. The lab froze extracts from the clothing under controlled conditions and recorded temperature logs. If any later review asked for a new run, the lab would have material ready. The property room logged the return of all bagged garments under seals signed with fresh ink. The clerk read every seam with a finger and checked each shape against images taken before the move. A briefing for leadership laid out the turn in the case. Slides showed the path from the canal to the lab, the profile, the family references, the retained sample, and the match. One slide carried a single line on status. The named man had died in 2019. No arrest would follow. The sheriff asked about the second profile hints that had lived in earlier tests. The lab said work continued. Detectives tracked the named man's life across jobs, rentals, and vehicles. Each address drew a small team to knock and ask if anyone remembered a white van, a trade, a nickname, a habit. Some doors gave clear memories. Some gave silence. Years change blocks. People move. Shops close. A few details still landed. One neighbor remembered a white van that parked tight to a hedge and faced out. Another recalled daytime hours that shifted with no warning. Notes filled a page and kept names of sources clean and separate from any conclusion. The team built a simple chart of where trace on cloth had been found and what those zones meant in terms of transfer. Cuff zones suggested hands. Pocket edges suggested a search or handling of fabric. Shoulder bands suggested contact with a seat back or door trim. The match did not answer motive or sequence. It did say who had left a voice on the fabric the girls wore. Ballistics and fibers from the 70s remained in the file. The lab ran them through modern scopes and databases. The checks ruled out some wider links people still spoke about. They neither tied the named man to a weapon nor to a second scene. The report wrote this plainly, so the record would not grow myths where the evidence did not speak. The unit set an internal checkpoint. Before any public statement, they would try every door that old tips named and every record that might fix the man's route in the week of the crime. A list went up on a board with checkboxes. Staff worked the list through weekends. A sergeant brought in dinner one night and told the room to keep logging until the board showed a clean line of effort. The line mattered for truth and for the families. A former co-worker of the named man offered a memory of a vehicle and a route that skirted the canals after deliveries. He could not fix the day. He did recall a habit of cutting time by using pull-offs to rest before turning back toward town. The detail matched the shape of the recovery site. The detective wrote it down with the same careful hand he used for every line. Memory helps when it sits next to maps. It does not replace them. The unit preserved all digital files in a read-only archive with off-site backup. Audio from witness talks moved into that vault with timestamps. The same chain verbs held. Receive. Record. Store. Audit. Release when needed in court or to families under policy. The lab reviewed the kinship analysis again with fresh eyes. A statistician outside the unit verified the numbers and signed a separate statement. The prosecutor placed that sheet into the packet that would meet any external review. Redundancy carried weight. The team wanted that weight on the right side of the scale. Months ran into years between the first match and the day the office would speak the name in front of cameras. During that time, detectives kept meeting with the families. They described progress and limits with the same steady tone each time. The families set the pace for those talks. Some ran short, some ran long. Trust grew from honest lines spoken many times. Questions about a second person near the bank never left the file. The set-down pattern and the heel marks still argued for two. The match to one name answered part of that shape. The team kept eyes on the second line. If any trace on cloth or any witness voice could carry a second name, the unit would follow it. A tip sheet from years earlier placed the named man in a circle that overlapped a younger associate. The sheet held no proof. Detectives asked for records that might place both men near Hollywood in the right month. Some papers surfaced. None stood alone. The file did not jump. The file waited for lab work and for a cleaner line. When the first name locked, the team resisted the pull to say the case was over. They wrote a memo that listed gaps and questions that sat outside the match. Sequence of transport. Exact route. Who drove? Whether a second set of hands touched cloth with strength enough to read. The memo pinned those gaps to future chapters and set deadlines to revisit them. A private briefing prepared the families for what a public day would feel like. No charges in a courtroom. No cross-exam. No sentence. Proof on paper. A name spoken into a microphone. The choice to attend remained with the families. The office offered front row seats and a quiet room off to the side. Advocates stood ready with water and time. Before the public day, the unit walked the route from Hollywood to the canal at the same hour of the first morning. They timed lights. They watched traffic flow. They stopped at the pull-off north of the recovery site and looked south into the reeds. The drive confirmed what the map had suggested. A person who knew the road could pull off, set down, and be back on the highway in minutes. The lab sealed every remaining garment with fresh tape and documented each seam. Extracts stayed frozen with temperature logs printed and filed. The lead wrote a short line at the end of the lab packet. The clothing retains value for further testing if new tools arise. That line honored the box and the people who had kept it right. In 2023, the unit wrote its internal close on the first name. The file moved to a shelf that held cases with named offenders who would never stand in front of a judge. The shelf still lived inside the active room. The case had another line to chase. The second profile hints had not gone quiet. Analysts kept at them. The families met the detective one more time before the next phase. They brought questions that mixed memory and law. He answered what he could and wrote down what he still needed to learn. He thanked them for the trust to keep calling even when progress felt slow. They thanked him for not letting silence stand where words belonged. A name now sat on the page where a blank had lived for decades. The file held more work and another line still rising from cloth, and the next chapter would follow it.